Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, listeners. The guest on Show Talk this afternoon, Show Talk with Angela Butler, is Daryl E. Watkins. Daryl E. Watkins is CEO of Watkins Incorporated Artist Management and Development. He is also a public relations and artist promotional media contract manager. Listeners, this show is sponsored by Dubai Encowers Mortgage Investments. Listeners, don't forget to contact Dubai Encowers Mortgage Investments. This company can handle all of your commercial financing needs. So contact them at 678-607-5092. Allow them to handle your commercial financing. And tell them that Show Talk with Angela Butler sent you. If you are interested in learning to know how to improve your credit, or if you want to establish business credit, call Dubai & Cowens at 1-678-607-5092 or go to their website and sign up. Their website is http://dubaincowens.web. All right, listeners, this afternoon, like I was saying, we have with us Daryl E. Watkins. Good afternoon, Daryl.
How you doing?
I'm doing fine, and you?
Oh, I'm doing great. Just glad to be able to come on your show and give listeners what they want to know and what they want to do and how they want to learn the industry.
Okay. How did you first get your start in the entertainment industry?
Being truthful, it's crazy. Now, people don't believe in this. Right tape, right place, right time. When I say the right time, right place, I had got off from work one evening, and there was the Black Radio Entertainment Awards going on in Atlanta, Georgia. And I was living, like, right across in the condominiums across the street from the Peachtree Plaza. I mean, Hyatt Regency. But anyway, I'm walking up the street and I'm seeing all these black people. I'm like, wait a minute, hold on. Now, what big major event is going on that we have this many folks here? So I asked this lady. So she told me. She said, "It's the BRE Black Radio Entertainment Awards." So I'm like, "What is it about?" And so she said, "It is where labels, DJs, artists, known and unknown, come." For, you know, it's a show. And it's mostly a lot of majors here, but there are some, you know, that want to try to get in because the labels are giving away a lot of money. So I got curious. I'm like, I was dressed up in a silk suit, you know, I was dressed up, you know, briefcase, everything. So I'm
okay.
Like, how may I get in? She said, well, it's too late to purchase tickets, but you can come in as my guest. So I did. So here we go, walking up in there. Yeah, I'm looking around. I'm seeing major artists and everything else. You know, I'm like, okay. You know, it's time to get my marketing skills on. So we walk up to the table, and her husband is sitting there. And he said, now, who is this with my wife? You've been messing around with me, wife. And he said, who are you? So I told him my name. So we got to talking, so he said, what do you want to do before I decide to kill you? And I said, hold on. You got a sheet of paper and a pen? And he said, what you doing? I said, I'm making my will and testament for you to take care of my children. And he busted out laughing. So from there, he said, you know what? You are creative. I'm going to call you Mr. Watt. So that's how I got the name Mr. Watt, which is basically all anybody in the industry except for very few people knew me as was Mr. Watt. Nobody knew my name.
Okay.
Nobody even know nothing because of the simple fact the people that I got in contact and the connects that I made there, a lot of the ideas, Haseem Salaam, he actually is the original founder of Rough Riders. A lot of people don't know this. Haseem has connects to everybody, anybody in the industry. And, I mean, this man, he, if I had a problem, I'd call him. And he would just make the contacts. And I didn't have to worry about nothing. Whatever I was doing, it was a go. with anybody, any label, anybody. So another guy named Sparky Martin, he came on the scene. That was, they were good friends. Sparky is the most shrewdest person I ever met in the industry. Now, he actually at that time managed Bobby Womack, B.B. King, and several other majors. So my curiosity was this right here. I wanted to know the industry. So he took me out. I'm talking about when I said I walked my legs off, I walked my legs off. But to get the knowledge and watch and listen to him, I worked for free.
Okay. All right.
Virtually. Now, it's like this right here. I did put the charge on him was food, and I made sure that I got the most expensive thing I could. I wasn't doing all that walking for nothing. I made sure I got a lot of it. So, you know, it's like trade-off, you know, when he said, man, you sure expensive when it comes down to food. I said, trade-off, man. I said, you working the mess out of me instead of a whole marketing team. I'm going from this restaurant, this event here, all these high-end places, and the concert was, Cleotis, I can't think of his name, and it was another guy, he's blind, and so they were on the ticket, plus several more jazz artists. So these were like top, these were top jazz artists now. Matter of fact, oh boy, his lady that used to manage, well, she used to be
Rachel?
107. No, not Ray Charles, not Benny King, but it's another guy. And he's real, he's old, and he's real famous. And anyway, it's, I mean, I walked, I was in Buckhead, I was at all these places where they're high end, I was at the Art Center after events, because people don't understand. You have your blacks that like jazz, yes, but they're willing to play, no. So most of the crowd, what people don't realize, is mainly your conservative white or your middle class whites. And so, you know, here I am going all about doing all this here, and it came about that, you know, I'm learning the art of marketing industry way. So the next thing I know, you know, we at the concert. Concert did pretty good. Sparky, now I learned later on, he was a shark. When I say a shark, people, unless they've really been in the industry, don't know what a shark is. You think you slick. You think you know something. Sparky was a true shark. There was nothing you could get him on. That boy would get money out of anybody. When I say get money, he could get lots of money. And got away with getting it, keeping it too, several times. I mean, you might have people looking for him, but I'm just telling you the truth. But that's one thing I said I would never do because, one, sometimes what one person do to one person in the street, it's like, well, they did it to me. They straight. And a lot of people don't understand that the industry, you got to know your people because you have people that will get you. When I say get you, they would take your money and look at you like, what you going to do about it?
Okay.
You signed the contract. I provided such and such service, and that's all I had to do. And that's it. You can't do nothing, really. But then sometimes they take your money. All they got to do is produce enough of it, and what you don't read is the fine print in the contracts. Now, I made some partnerships with a couple of guys from LaFace Records. They were both producers. I got out there. I mean, we were dealing with Warren G, people out in California, several other majors during that time. I mean, we producing tracks for them. There was an entertainment company called Juggernaut Entertainment. They were doing beats for movies. I mean, they were off the chain. And they had artists, and I was pushing stuff for them. I was dealing with the head guy for, what's the movie maker? DreamWorks. They had a label. I was handling stuff for about everybody. I was doing a lot of marketing, footwork. Going into a club, it was like $150. Going into a strip club, $200-something. Going to a radio station, $500 for knocking off each album.
Okay.
Getting signatures showing that I had done this. then they would do their checks. Sometimes they check, sometimes they wouldn't. So, I mean, people don't understand. There's many ways to make money in the industry, not just I got to be an artist, I got to be a producer, I got to be a manager. There are so many ways to make money, but you got to be creative. That's the part. Your mind has to stay open. You got to look at your situation.
Okay.
And I'm going to just tell you right now, just say it like it is. Pimp your situation. Take and turn it to fit you. Not let the situation control you. Be open. Be willing to negotiate. You have to keep your mind open. You better know your contracts. You better know the all the little fine tooth this, that. Okay?
Okay.
Because people will get you. And sometimes you'll do a job for free. Yeah, I got stuck. I mean, ain't no lie. I mean, I was with the best. Okay? I was taught by the best. I have worked with some of the best. I have some people, they were like, I would come in somewhere, give you an example. Jay-Z, when he came out again, he had that big show in Atlanta. He had the little prison group, I forgot what they call them, and him and Bobby, his brother, they were there. So everybody was like, who is this? Who is this? And, you know, the locals, they were like swarming around me because, one, I always listen to artists. I'm not one of these people where I would be like, yeah, give me your stuff and throw it in the draw. I would actually listen to them, call them, and tell them how to fine-tune what to do to make their stuff sound better. I've always had an ear for music since I was a child. I was 5, give you an example. My father had a guitar.
Okay.
And then, basically, the radio stations where I was from, I grew up in a small country town in North Georgia. It was like 45,000 called Rome, Georgia.
So that's where you're from originally?
That's where I'm from originally. So you're talking about rock. That's mainly what we heard was rock. Once in a while, you hear Aretha and them come on about every 20 songs. So this was FM. So anyway, the song I Can't Get No Satisfaction. I used to love that song. I used to love that. So I picked my father's guitar up, and I started doing it. You know, he's looking at me like, what? But the part about it is I have a natural ear for music. I have a natural ear for sound.
Okay.
I have actually picked up a bass and drums, but I don't have, how would you say, I don't have the applying of it to go further with it. It's just
okay.
What I feel at that moment.
What
so,
is your educational?
Say what now?
What is your educational background?
I went to East Longwell. I came up in time where there was integration, first blacks to go to school. We went to white schools. You're talking about East Main Anchor Duck. That was the name of the kindergarten head start. Then I went to Central Primary. I didn't really touch my, it was about 20 blacks there in all different grades. I didn't touch my first mixed school until I got to junior high. And it was a culture shock for me. Because I grew up in a white neighborhood. Virtually, it wasn't nothing but 2 families, 3 families in the area. So for me, coming home, I was kind of sheltered. My mother had a salon. My father, he worked for West Point Pepperell Cotton Mill. He was a foreman there, like the first black foreman for West Point Pepperell back in those days. Plus, on top of that, he was head deacon at the church. My mom, head of the Ursher Board. My father, he was one of these. He was a World War II veteran. He was my adopted father, my great uncle. He had he ruled with an iron hand. When I say he ruled with that iron hand and thumb, it was like jump when I say jump, turn when I say turn, blase, blase. And that was it. Wasn't no questioning, wasn't no talking back, wasn't nothing. So he forced me to read. I'm talking about dictionaries, encyclopedias. He was mean as a rattlesnake, being truthful. I'm just being truthful about it. But he brought me up in a way where I had a focus. I might not have had the focus at that time. Then when he went blind and then he got real sick and was on dialysis, he almost died. He ended up going on dialysis. So we were trucking back and forth to the VA. Virtually, I had hands-on business because I had to help my mom with the salon. I had to help run my little father, his little business garage. He kind of worked on, he was a master mechanic, World War II veteran, worked on anything. That man could do anything. We had rental houses. He made me learn to do the carpentry and a little electrical work and work on generators and alternators and just all kind of stuff, fix anything and everything.
Okay. So that was your educational background?
No, that's just part of it. I went in service. So I was in supply when I was in service. I went right after high school. I jetted in because he said to me, he got mad because I signed up for service at 16. And so as soon as I graduated, it wasn't even 2 weeks later, I was gone. And he was like, I want you to go to college. I'm like, I want to get out from up under your iron thumb to myself. So away I went. And from there, went to Lynnwood, Fort Lee, Virginia, Fort Polk. Then I went to the School of Hard Knocks. In other words, when I finally got out for a while, I said I wasn't coming home. So I was living in Alexandria. I had to learn what family life was because I took on a family. I was like 20 years old, got my own house. It was a shotgun, but it was in Alexandria, but it was a house. And then from there, my father died. Well, my mother died. Then my father died 5 months later. So here I am, only child, adopted. Here I am stuck with a bunch of houses, salon, family. Everybody was like, gimme, 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 gimme. So I had to learn, like I said, the street of hard knocks, learning what people were about. I mean, I was so hurt. Nobody shouldered the crown. Everybody was like, you know, just gimme, gimme, gimme. So
okay.
I said, it was very painful. I sold everything. And I just took off. I went to Atlanta for a while, went to hair school, went through a lot, became a secret partner in Fox Salon, which is in the AT&T Towers. Well, it's AT&T now, but it was Southern Bell Towers at the time. It was their headquarters. And we was up there. I'm talking about clients galore. I mean, people with money, everything. And I became a womanizer. So that was part of my education, learning about you all, you know, learning what I can do and can't do. So I went through that. Then I met a young lady and went through the family life again. That woman I love still now. And I have a daughter. She's 23 from her. And I have a granddaughter. And the breakup of that, the heartaches and the long aches. And finally, I was going from here, copier tech. I got sick and burned out of hair. Actually, I got sick of children, having children. That was a lesson. The next thing was finally just going through the troubles of life, bumping my head, wrong place, wrong time, having to learn because I was always sheltered. Went back in service again. It was just growth in life, period. That was one part of it. So as I got on into my 30s, I started, you know, that's when I got into the music industry, and mine was the street style of it. I didn't get into my 40s till I went to, through the Voc Rehab, Chapter 31, I dealt with St. Leo University. That was out at Fort McPherson. Then I went to Mississippi and Gulf Coast Community College. Then I went to Tulane University down there in the Gulf Coast of Mississippi, Gulfport, Biloxi. From there, I'm now at currently, I took up business management marketing, and at Tulane I took up communications, mass communications. Now, currently, I am at Central Texas College. I am taking up the other part of communications, mass communications, radio, television, production, and announcing, and producer. So,
okay. How did you become head of the Southeast Rough Riders Division?
Well, actually, it was a fight involved in it because it was more involved with family. I was interim on that for a minute. It wasn't officially, it hadn't, for 2 years, it wasn't official for one simple reason. I was the choice of the one person that I said was the unknown true founder of Rough Rider. He had an interest in it because they used the name, and it was wrong. But then, in other words, they got the right, so he got an official, he got an interest in it, but it was not disclosed he was a partner in it.
Okay.
So I was his choice because he said, because I'm creative and a fresh mind, not family, not somebody who just get money and spend, you know, just because, oh, I'm Rough Rider and I got this money. But that ended in a way I became actually like the head person for the Georgia and the Georgia representative for Rough Riders. That was like A&R, the marketing rep. Setting up shows when artists come through, make sure everything, meet them and make sure everything is done for them. So like I say, it wasn't quite official, but I was in the position until it was really picked. So it, I guess it was kind of bargaining that it was done because it came to a standstill. And then like 2 years later, Rough Rider South was formed.
Okay.
So it made a lot of difference, but it was an experience. Then another instance was when L.A. Reid and them left LaFace, and more or less it was dissolved into a smaller company. I was one of the choices to actually possibly look at being head of that. And again, Kasim Salam, he was my protector in the industry. He was my guide. He was my, how would you say, he steered me and made sure I was in the right direction until one day he said, like this right here, you're very creative. You know how to make it happen. You know, if you need the contacts, I'll make sure that that's done, or I get you who it is, but you didn't develop a behind-the-scenes name enough. Now you can do what you want. So, you know, it kind of like, I would just say, I kind of got the big head, but I didn't. Because I knew one thing. I didn't, you know, I couldn't let pride, I couldn't be that person where people hated me. But then again, too, I could be that person where people knew I didn't take no mess.
This was Rough Riders Division?
No, this was actually just on my own.
Okay.
You know, more or less, I used it to elevate myself to parts, to things that was interesting. I included a movie that would have came out, this is one of my life experiences right here, that DMX and several more majors would have actually been in back in 2006, 2007, something like that. Boy, the project was going good, everything coming along. I mean, I'm talking to John Gotti. He was managing DMX at the time. I'm talking to this person, that person. I'm talking about major people. I'm executive producer. The guy hands me a book and says he wants a movie made, so I call Kasim, and he put all this stuff together. Boy, lo and behold, I met a young lady, put everything in her name because I'm going for my VA disability, and guess what happened to me?
What?
She gets jealous because I got a lady willing to invest some money in me, and I'm spending some time, you know, by wine and dine and making sure I'm going to get this money. The late
okay.
night talks and everything. You won't believe this. This girl got jealous. Said I stole my own vehicle. I had it in her name. I didn't have no paperwork back and nothing. I had a power attorney. They was in my place. She got me in jail long enough because she had keys to her place to go get it. Through jealousy. I did
okay.
2 years in prison. When I said I did 2 years in prison, I went to 2 years in prison. But when I came out, it was like I never went because I was on a tear again. I was determined not to let that stop me. And here I go again, dealing with Rough Riders. Saji, he's out of New York. He had a magazine. I helped push him. And a lot of people know about Don Diva Magazine. I worked for him. I pushed his stuff through the Southeast at that time. And he's now, like, he's well-known. Everybody, anybody. He had his book. It's called Don Diva's Bible. It is street
okay.
Bible, okay? And his magazine, you know, it took off. It's still sold everywhere now.
Okay.
And, I mean, everybody in the industry, he used to deal with Rough Riders like crazy, but that's another story in itself I'm not going to put on the air because there were times with that, ooh-wee, like I went through.
Okay.
I was so, actually, go ahead.
How would persons keep from being scammed in the entertainment industry?
First thing first, learn your intellectual laws. Get you an entertainment attorney. Don't try to be everything it is. Don't try to be an artist. Don't try to be a producer. Don't try to be a marketer. I know this, I know that. Oh, my people this and that. Your people take you for a ride and hit you too, tell you they get you here and leave you sitting there looking, still from the sideline. Oh, you're a groupie. You're a follower. You going behind them because you think one day, oh, I'm going to get there. I mean, it's so much people don't understand. You have got to know the ins and outs. You got to know rules, laws, contracts. Contracts are open and why. You can negotiate a contract to fit you as long as you don't turn around and sign one. You can get out of a contract through arbitration. And, you know, and it can be done. You file for the arbitration. It's taken to probate court, and you can actually walk out. Most people, if they hadn't used up all this money and didn't do what they were supposed to do, as long as you show that you've done what you're supposed to do and the person didn't complete their end, like a manager, he doesn't do his job to get you. He is to work for you. His job is to make sure that you're known, because if he doesn't get you known, he's not doing his job. If he don't get you shows, he's not doing his job. It's a lot of things people don't understand that the manager is an advisor. His job is to work for you. He is not to supply your ways and means. If he do, it is his job to charge you an interest. He can make no more than 20%. And that is as a rule, and the figure drops down over the years if in that contract, unless you renew a new contract and he does a good job. He gets you where you want to be. I mean, it's just so many factors people got to understand about it. You know, everybody wants to try to be a little bit of everything. If you're going to be everything, take one at a time. Not try to do, oh, I'm this and I'm doing this and I'm my own man. Because you can't focus. You can't be what you're going to be, a producer. You can't go, not going to be what you're going to be, an artist. Your job as an artist is to be an artist. An artist only.
What was being manager of the Funkadelics like?
Oh, you really want to know? I felt like, you remember the Diaper Man? Well, I felt like I had a bunch of grown older men that had diapers. I was actually manager of the original Parliaments, which had separated from George Clinton and Bootsy. I had all the rest of the members. The girls had changed, of course. There was a few changes in the players because some had died or sick or something, but the majority were there. Remember the big dude that wore the dashiki? That was how I got hooked up with them, Grady. We met somewhere, I can't even recall, and matter of fact, we was at the same storage place. I had a storage there. He had one there. And, you know, I looked and saw these instruments. I said, what band are you with? So he told me. I said, well, I used to work with Rough Riders and still work with them, you know, on an off-on basis. And I've worked with several other artists, you know, in other capacities and other labels in other capacities. So he's like, well, we don't have a manager and we're looking for a manager. So let me put it to him. So me and Grady, we got to where I was hanging out at his house all the time. We were in the basement working on songs and everything. And so that's how I ended up becoming a manager. Sparky Martin. I mean, not Sparky, but I can't even think of the bald-headed short one. I'm bad about names. I'm getting old now. I'm in my 50s. So, you know, memory does not, and the amount of people that I've met, you know, doesn't compute anymore, because faces I remember. Names is like, duh.
Okay. Why did you choose to become an entertainment consultant?
Well, I virtually went through every phase of the entertainment field, and I could pretty much do anything, say anything, help people in any kind of ways.
Yeah.
Okay. What is the biggest mistake?
Could
you
hold on
just
a minute?
Okay. All right, listeners, we're going to go to break.
Hello? Sorry about that.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Getting back, what were we at?
We were talking about why you decided to become an entertainment consultant. You answered the question. What is the biggest mistake that you have seen people make in the entertainment industry?
Thinking that they can do it all and not listening. I know this, I know that, I know this, I know that. That means that it's a common thing, you know, people get the big head and you can't tell them nothing.
Okay. What is the difference? What is your favorite type of music?
It varies. I love reggae. But I still go back to old school R&B. I mean, from the Earth, Wind & Fire, Al Green, on up into LTD. I love jazz, of course. It just varies depending upon what the song is.
Is there a legal percentage that managers are supposed to make?
Yes, 20%.
Okay.
Now, you got some people that fall boo-boo and they virtually sign over everything and then they get chumped out. This is their manager, okay? You have your personal manager. He makes his money also in other ways from getting concerts. There's two types of managers. There's your business manager. There's your manager manager. There's your personal manager. So it can go to three types of managers.
All right. What is the name of your company?
Well,
Watt Inc. Be contacted for representation.
Watt Inc. and Corp. is my artist management company, and D&D Consultants and Multimedia Group is my entertainment consulting company. Basically, I have endeavored off into film production, TV, radio, all that. So, I mean, I'm bringing this into the forte to become a full media company. When I say a full media company, there is not nothing from setting up radio platforms where people can actually know how to get their shows done, their marketing, just about anything it is in the industry that needs to be done, that I cannot give you the format of how to do it and ways to come about. Also knowing your intellectual laws, FCC laws, it's just so much that you have to do. It's phenomenal.
It's phenomenal. Okay.
It's phenomenal.
All right. How can your company be contacted? Do you have
I don't mind calling on my cell phone, which is 678-431-4552, or you can Facebook me at Darrell Watkins, Watkins, or you can go to my company, D-N-D Consultants, Consultant, and Multi, N-A-N-D, and Multimedia Group on Facebook.
Okay. We have a caller. I'm going to see if the caller has a question. We have a lot of callers, but I'm going to go to one. Hello, caller. Do you have a question? Caller, do you have a question? All right, I guess not.
Okay.
I guess they just called to listen.
Okay.
Why do some artists end up without money? I mean, are there fees for being in the entertainment industry or something that are undisclosed or something? Because I know you hear stories about people who have lots of money and then they suddenly end up, you know, with little or nothing. Why is that?
Bad investment. I mean, it's just so much. I mean, there are adventures that people take. You have bad investments. You have things that first go good, then ended up you might have somebody come on their end, and here you are stuck with it. Then you got the party life. And if you're male, you got the girls. If you female, you know, you got to watch. I mean, you have your entourage, people that virtually live off you. I mean, it's just so much that people don't realize. I mean, you sporting and carrying everybody, paying for their food. You got, I can't think of his name out of Florida, but he carries an entourage of 100 people. I'm trying to think of his name. Dark skin, he's hip-hop. But his entourage is 100 people. You got to, when you get him, you got all these people that he's going to bring with him. Matter of fact, Trina's on his own sign with him. Him and her, they're together. But I'm just saying, this is the type of thing that people don't realize. And today, with the new industry and with the internet, people are actually, how would you say, they're performing more shows. I mean, they're performing so many shows to the point of exhaustion. I mean, they are hyped up on weed, drugs, and everything else to do this. And, I mean, they go. And they don't even realize the taxing on their body, the age. They're living a lot with their voice because they wear their voice out and they got to heal. I mean, it's just so much. I mean, I listen to some of the artists and, you know, I mean, either from tweets, sometimes calls, either, you know, Facebook, and they be like, man, it's killing me, man. You know, I'm doing all these shows to make my money because I don't make the money I used to make because the internet is cutting down on the fees and this and that. And, you know, that's when the artists make their money. It used to be they might get some performance on a new song. They might have a certain type of tour that's going on. Basically, the other time they would actually, when the music season closed down in September, basically starting in September, they started to get ready to get on the road. They perform all through till January. And the music season opens back up in January. But for that first week or two, you're not going to get nothing done. When I say you're not going to get nothing done, I don't care who you call. You're not going to get nothing done because everybody's getting their budgets together. They're getting everything set for the new year with the labels. Everybody's in meetings and everything. So, you know, it's a shutdown for the first 2 weeks. After that, it slowly opens up. So,
okay.
I mean, it's a lot that you got to look at with the industry.
Okay. How do you yourself handle power, money, and respect? How do you handle it?
Power, I guess I get it from my uncle on that. It's like, you know, I keep my mind open, but when it's something I know that works, I'm not going to change from it. That's one thing. The old way, and it works, I'm going to stay with it. I'm going to use it because
okay.
I know it ain't no chance of it breaking down unless somebody else just totally, you know, break down, mess up. Then I know how to step in, and I got to fill in. The other thing, when it comes down to money, I'm cheap. I am so frugal. I mean, frugal ain't the word for it. I'm just a cheapskate.
Okay.
I am 52 years old. As of November 24th, guess what? Never been married. Close, but never been married.
Okay.
And the other thing is like this right here. I don't like headaches. So when I say I don't like headaches, ladies, it's like this right here. I love you all to death. I mean, I love you. But I don't like headaches, none at all, because of one simple reason. I don't like my pocket. I hold my pocket. Don't ever tell me your money is my money. you just seen the back of my heels hit the crack of my behind as I get away from you.
Okay.
All right. You know, I mean, it's just so much. And the part is always staying focused. You have to stay focused.
All right. All right. I thank you for coming on Show Talk with Angela Butler. I've enjoyed having you. You've answered a great majority of my questions, you know, and I really appreciate you coming on the show and everything, talking about the Rough Riders and all of that. I really thank you.
No problem.
Do you want to give the name of your company again? Or
DND Consultants and Multimedia Group on Facebook, or you can hit me up, Darrell Watkins, D-A-R-R-E-L-L Watkins, W-A-T-K-I-N-S. And
okay,
if Facebook me, you will actually see me with, it's going to be a group standing up there of artists. They're major, they're part of Wu-Tang. You'll see me standing in a suit. You might look up and see me standing behind a TV camera. But all I'm just saying is this right here. I'm about business. I love business. I'm creative. I love to help a person. I mean, some people, I would just give you the advice. I mean, I have consulting fees, yes, but I would give you the advice because as long as you're trying, like somebody did me, I'm going to give back, but I can sense and feel when you're for real or you just flopping around, don't know what you're going to do.
Okay.
So.
All right. All right, and I know you
thank
give advice, and I thank you for coming on the show.
Yeah, and I really thank you.
Get plenty of business off the show.
All right, it's no problem. Y'all have a nice day, and, hey, everybody, listen. Learn to listen is the most important tool that you got, and advice is free. Remember that, and the DJs are your best friend. Use them because they're your best friends. Always remember that, and your VJs. Y'all have a nice day. Bye-bye.
Good night.
Good night.
Listeners, we had on here Mr. Watts, as he calls himself, or Darrell E. Watkins. Listeners, I'd like to say don't forget to contact Gobine and Calmers if you're interested in mortgage investments. This company can handle all of your commercial financing needs, so contact them at 678-607-5092 and allow them to handle your commercial financing and tell them that Show Talk with Angela Butler sent you. Also, they can be contacted through their website, http://gobine.webs.com. And listeners, if you are interested in learning to know how to improve your credit or if you want to establish business credit, call Dobine and Calvin's at 678-607-5092 or go to their website. Listeners, thank you for listening to Show Talk with Angela Butler. I also like to say the show is moving to .com/365live. So that's .com/365live. So follow me there, and I'll have more great guests, and I'll give you the date on this show when I'll be moving and everything. But that is .com/365live. I'll be still a little while longer on Blog Talk. All right, thank you. I'll announce the date. I'll either on Facebook and through the show. All right, bye everyone.